Welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell, ESPN. We are here for our midweek show. It's Thursday, October 18th, 2018. Week 7 of the NFL season approaches. We're going to start this week, though, with a team who is not playing in Week 7, a team who wrapped up Week 6 with a comeback victory. Very exciting game, and a person I've been meaning to have on the podcast for a while now, but a first-time guest. It is ESPN Packers reporter Rob Domofsky. Rob, how are you?
I'm great, Bill. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. I'm meaning to have you on, and I think there's a really difficult team to unpack here with the Green Bay Packers, a team that I think we all expect when Aaron Rodgers is healthy, they are going to be a playoff contender. They're always going to be in the thick of things. And he has not been healthy necessarily, but of course he has been on the field so far. We'll get to Rodgers in a second, but just in terms of the big broad picture with the Packers, 3-2-1, half game back in the NFC North, right in the thick of things, of course, in a division that is still wide open. It feels like they've almost been a different team from game to game, but overall, just thinking about the bigger picture, if you had to give them a grade for their start to the season, where do you peg them after the first 6 weeks of the campaign?
Ooh, wow. I think everyone thought that with Rodgers coming back from what he experienced last year with the broken collarbone and sort of a lost season, that they would come out of the gates fast. I mean, they'd really shoot out of the gates, and the schedule sort of set up for that to happen with what, three home games in the first 4 weeks. And so I think they've underachieved to this point. You know, if I had to give them a grade, I mean, C minus, because they're definitely a little bit below average. You know, we all do it when the schedule comes out and we sit there and we go, okay, this is a win, this is a loss, this is a win, this is a win. I'll be honest, I had them at 5-1 going into the bye. Now, you know, obviously circumstances changed. Rodgers hurt to the knee in the game against Chicago in week one. But, you know, 5-1 was really doable. And now maybe Washington ends up a little bit better than, you know, we thought they were going to be. But that was a game where they were really not very competitive in it, down 28-10 at one point in that game. So, you know, 3-2-1 is definitely a disappointment.
Yeah, and I mean, you think about even on the flip side of that, think about the Niners game on Monday, where you would have said before the year, well, it's going to be a shootout. You got Jimmy Garoppolo coming in, and that offense has just been riddled with injuries. I mean, that's a lineup that has got guys who are not playing at 100% or backups at quarterback, halfback. Some of the receivers are missing. I mean, it's a really beat-up offense, and they still scored 30 points on the Packers, 401 yards of offense in the game. And I mean, I think what I struggle with is you look at the results, and you could say, okay, well, if a couple of things go differently, if the Bears convert that first down on third and short in the second half of week one, the Vikings kicker doesn't have a nightmare game, if the Niners hold on to that lead on Monday night, they could be 1-5, but then you flip it. Well, Mason Crosby had a horrific game against the Lions. Maybe they win that game if Mason Crosby is a better kicker in that game. Maybe they hold on to that lead against the Vikings, don't convert that that incredible Kirk Cousins pass to, I believe, Adam Thielen down the sidelines. They could be 5-1. So I don't know what to make of this team right now. Do you find it hard to judge where they're at, or you just think overall, given on a play-by-play basis, as someone who watches this team very closely, that they're still, you know, regardless of record, still pretty disappointing?
Yeah, no, I think you make great points, and I mean, you talk about the, you know, the 1-5 possibility. I mean, if the phantom holding call or illegal contact on Richard Sherman isn't called, Aaron Rodgers is sacked, they don't go down, kick the game-winning field goal, the thing probably goes to overtime, and then who knows what happens. So there's all kinds of, you know, these little plays that could have gone either way, but you know, I think they do tend to even out over the course of a season, and they've evened out over six games. I mean, as you mentioned, the Crosby, you know, Crosby left, what, 13 points on the field, and they lost at Detroit by, what was it, 8? So, you know, there's so many different ways to look at it. I think you have to, like you say, play by play, you look at it and you say, well, they're not the consistent offense that you think they are. The stats, they kind of lie. I mean, Rodgers has thrown for, what, over 400 yards the last two games, but, you know, they've come out and they've started terribly in those games, and it's really un-Rodgers-like offense. And then you look on the flip side, defensively, they were fourth in yards going into that last game against the Niners, and even Mike Pettine, the new defensive coordinator, said, hey, look, that's a mirage. You know, we've got some short fields. You know, the bigger difference is points, and we're in the middle of the pack there. But Mike Pettine, as a defensive coordinator, Bill, has never finished outside the top 10 in yards, both with the Jets and the Bills. So, you know, they're on track there, but yet it still seems like they give up too many big plays. You mentioned the play to Thielen down the sideline. I mean, look at the plays that they gave up to the Niners in the other night with the deep receiver. I mean, you know, they don't have the speed to match up with guys like that. I thought the 49ers made them look slow on defense. So I think this is a team that's sitting here sort of licking their wounds a little bit. Could be fortunate to be where they are, but also probably should be a little bit better than where they are, like you said.
So let's start with Aaron Rodgers. Let's start with the offense, because like you said, the numbers, you look at them, they're pretty impressive. I mean, he still has 12 touchdowns, one interception. Of course, I think the game that people saw the most of, you know, they saw the game Monday night, of course, but then you think about that week one game against the Bears where he was absolutely incredible in the second half on one leg. You look at total QBR, though, which is, not again, not perfect, but something that is a little more advanced in terms of quarterback analysis, has Rodgers at 16th in the league through 6 weeks. Do you think that is a more accurate representation of how he's playing? I mean, do you think in any of the offensive slowdowns so far could be attributed to Rodgers, or is it more about the people around him?
Well, you're right. I mean, I think he's closer to what his QBR says than what his touchdown interception ratio is, which is fantastic. But, you know, Bill, the only area that they've really been great at offensively is when they've gone no huddle 2 minutes. And that's, you know, that's what they did when they were down against the Bears. That's what they did, you know, the other night against San Francisco when they fell behind. That's what they did when they tried to come back against Detroit and almost did. So, you know, that's a little bit scheme, a little bit play calling. I think there's been some disconnect there as Rodgers brought to the forefront after the game against the Bills. You know, he clearly doesn't love what they're doing on offense or what they've done from a planning standpoint, and he's trying to take it into his own hands a little bit. The knee injury has certainly been an issue. He's missed throws at times that he's normally made. He's not only missed throws, he's missed open receivers that he just hasn't even seen. There was a play in the Buffalo game early on where he had Davante Adams wide open on third down right at the marker, and he threw underneath. He admitted he didn't see him. That's just not things that you're normally used to seeing from Rodgers. Now, I do think the lack of preparation time, all the time that he's had to spend in the rehab room, he clearly does not like wearing the knee brace. He's brought that up on several occasions and has said right after the game Monday night that he hopes when they come back from the bye that he doesn't have to wear the brace. But that's something that the doctors and the coaching staff will decide together. Not having Randall Cobb and Geronimo Allison in the last couple games has not helped. And my point is, in rattling off all these things, there's just a myriad factors that have slowed this team down offensively. That said, Rodgers, when it's mattered, has still been fantastic. And remember what was it, 3-4 years ago, when we would have said, boy, Rodgers' biggest shortcoming is his lack of fourth quarter clutch drives. Well, I go back to, I think it was 2014 or 15, when he had the game in Miami where it was the fake spike play, throw it to Davante Adams, and then the next play they hit, I think it was Andrew Corliss, the tight end, for a touchdown. And that sort of started this, you know, hey, Rodgers is now really good in the clutch. And ever since then, he's had some amazing, you know, fourth quarter finishes. Obviously, there's the Hail Mary plays that he had at Detroit and Arizona in the playoff game. But it goes deeper. There's the Cincinnati game last year, the Dallas game at Dallas the week before he gets hurt. I mean, don't forget last year, before he hurt the collarbone, I thought he was playing his best football. I mean, really MVP level type stuff. And, you know, it's taken him, you know, he hasn't quite gotten back to that. And, you know, he missed a lot of football over the last, 10 months, you know, going back to the collarbone injury. So, you know, maybe we should cut him a little slack from that regard and just trying to sort of get back into the rhythm.
Yeah, it does seem like, you know, it'd be one thing if he sort of, in those moments where you absolutely need Rodgers to make a big play, that he couldn't get out, you know, he couldn't coax it out of himself. But I've seen, like you said, week one against the Bears, week six against the Niners. I mean, this is a guy who we know his knee is not 100%, but when that space opened up in front of him, you know, he scrambled for a big play in that game, you know, on Monday. Yeah. So even though he's not 100%, even though there's going to be moments, it seems like, where he's going to get up after a hit and his knee's not going to look great. It's not going to feel good. seems like he's still playing pretty well. And I guess I wonder, you know, and I guess I have to ask this question because if not, fantasy players will kill me. The one thing you would figure might be able to take some of the pressure off Rodgers, of course, getting the receivers back will help. Having a healthy offensive line is always good, but having a more effective running game, that has been a big concern, it seems like, for the entirety of Aaron Rodgers' tenure with the Green Bay Packers. And the question that comes up every week, and I want to hear your answer because I don't have an answer, I have to admit, is why isn't Aaron Jones getting more carries? He started last week, and that seemed like it was going to be a positive thing, and then he only got 19 snaps. So what's the deal here with Aaron Jones and this Packers offense?
Yeah, I've written like 3 weeks in a row after him coming off the suspension that Aaron Jones could be what the offense needs, could be the cure for their issues. And look, Mike McCarthy is nothing if not stubborn. He said in the offseason we're going to be running back by committee. He said in the summer we're going to be running back by committee. He said week one, two, when Jones was out, we're going to be running back by committee, and so on and so on. And look, he did. He started the other night. They ran a beautiful play-action bootleg, and they hit Marquez Valdes-Scantling for, 60 yards down the sideline. And the reason they ran the bootleg is because Aaron Jones is not good in pass protection. So they were able to get Rodgers out, and he didn't have to worry about his running back picking up the blitz. The next play, Aaron Jones rips off a 16-yard run, and they're at the one-yard line. So you think, here we go. This is the way they're going to play with Jones. And they never really got back to it. Now, some of it, McCarthy will tell you, is the game just, you know, went a different direction. He likes to say that, went a different direction from what they had planned. But pass protection is a real issue. Jamal Williams is a much better blitz pickup guy than Aaron Jones. You can throw the film out from the weeks 3 and 4 and see where Rodgers had to scramble out of there because Jones couldn't pick the guy up, the blitzing linebacker or safety. But at some point, you know, you have to say, look, we're going to do some things schematically to help Rodgers when Jones is in the game because Jones is so effective. And I do think you could go back to even when Eddie Lacy was the number one running back here, he never got over the 17, 18 carry mark until right around early November. McCarthy doesn't want to wear a guy out. I said it in the summer that I thought at some point this season Aaron Jones would be the number one running back. It hasn't happened yet. I still think it will happen. It just may not happen until early to mid-November when they're pretty sure that they haven't worn him down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, they're certainly not concerned about wearing him down so far. I would not characterize him as worn down in the slightest. No. But right now, through the last since he came back into the lineup, which I believe was week 3, 77 carries for the triad of Jones, Jamal Williams, and Ty Montgomery. Jones is 32 of them. Not that good at math, but it's a little under half. I mean, do you think that's where he comes back in that 45% of the carries range? I think it's where he comes back after the bye, or do you think that they might use the bye to get him maybe to 50, 60% of the rushing attempts?
Yeah, I think they're trending toward getting him up there, and especially when you look at yards per carry. I mean, it's a huge difference. He's at, I think it's almost 6 yards a carry. Yeah, 5.9 yards a carry. Jamal Williams is at 3.8, Ty Montgomery is around a little over 4. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that alone tells you that they need to get him much more work, and I do think it's trending that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you. All right, Rob, let's talk about the defense here in a moment, but first, I want to talk about our friends at MeUndies. You know I love discussing MeUndies. Just talked about Aaron Rodgers, how much he hates that knee brace. Well, I wish MeUndies would make a knee brace because Aaron Rodgers would love how comfortable it was. It might not be maybe the best thing for your actual knee. I'm not sure that it would be up to code necessarily, but I can say that MeUndies is great for wherever you want to wear them. And of course, there are so many different things MeUndies offers. It's not just underwear, it's socks, it's t-shirts, it's lounge pants. Oh man, the lounge pants. Let me tell you, there is nothing I work in more frequently since I get to work from home, which is the biggest scam in the world. I get to wear those lounge pants all day, and it is a fantastic time to be alive. They're the only thing I wear when I work from home. I wear a shirt too, but it's a MeUndies shirt. You get it. You get the idea. When I head out, unfortunately, sometimes I do it to leave my house to go do humid things. I put on the MeUndies. I put on the socks. I am super comfortable no matter where I go. It feels like I'm not even wearing underwear, although fortunately for me and the people around me, I am. And if you want to join me in that group, whether it's the lounge pants, whether it's the underwear, the socks, anything you are looking for, you can get a comfortable pair of sustainably sourced MeUndies at MeUndies.com today. If you have not bought MeUndies yet, this is your lucky day. You get 20% off your first pair and free shipping by using my URL, my promo code, my name, Barnwell, B-A-R-N-W-E-L-L. Go to MeUndies.com/Barnwell. You'll get 20% off your first pair, free shipping, and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. If you do not like the underwear or whatever you buy, they will do whatever they can to get you in the right pair. And if you don't like that, you just get to keep it. They'll refund you your money. You cannot beat that. You have to give it a shot. It is absolutely worth it. MeUndies.com/Barnwell. Now back to the show. In terms of the defensive side of the ball, of course, the big story heading into the year, like you said, was Mike Pettine coming in as the new defensive coordinator. And then it was going to be adding Muhammad Wilkerson, who, of course, unfortunately, is done for the year with an injury. But the secondary was the big concern. They used two picks on the secondary, brought back Tremont Williams. How has this secondary seemed to you so far this year in terms of their ability to stop teams from throwing the football on the Packers?
Yeah, the problem last year was cornerback. They seem to have solved that. Kevin King is finally playing up to what they thought he would be when they picked him with their first pick last year. They like the rookies, although Jair Alexander has been out the last couple games with the groin. They like him and Josh Jackson. The problem now is safety play. They let Morgan Burnett go in free agency last offseason. The year before, they let Micah Hyde go to Buffalo, and he ended up as a Pro Bowler. Ha-ha Clinton Dix has not played up to his Pro Bowl season of 2016. Their second round pick from 17, Josh Jones, has played four snaps on defense all year, and it's not all injury related. He just can't get on the field because of his performance. And they're playing an undrafted rookie, Kentrell Bryce, at the other safety spot, who doesn't seem to understand deep coverages, because two of the big deep balls that have been thrown over the top of their defense have been with Bryce in help coverage. Deep safety help. So it's sort of like, you know, they plugged the dam in one spot and they finally fixed their cornerback situation, and now their safeties are an absolute mess. So of course it would help if they got a little bit more pass rush. Clay Matthews has a sack and a half, but has had the issues with the late hits and the penalties and all that. I still think Matthews is an effective player and can help those guys on the back end, but they don't have enough Clay Matthews type players up front. So it's a real issue. And, you know, we talked about Pettine's arrival. You know, everyone was ready to run Dom Capers out of town 2 years ago, and it finally happened. But it's not like, you know, there's been a huge impact by Pettine, and not all Pettine's fault. If you look back at their drafts, Bill, and I'm working on a piece for next week at this, they don't have very many starters from the last three Ted Thompson drafts. They just, they spent a lot of those picks on defense, and not a lot of them have worked out. And it's really set them back from a defensive standpoint.
Yeah, it's certainly clear to look at that. I mean, in terms of that safety position, do you think they make changes in the short term and long term? Do you think they would consider benching Kentrell Bryce if he continues to struggle? And then do you think Ha-Ha Clinton Dix is a player who we see on the Packers roster after this season?
Well, Clinton Dix is an interesting case study because statistically his numbers look very good already. He's got three interceptions, a forced fumble, and a sack in six games. You know, those are all big impact splash plays. Their secondary coach, Joe Witt, likes to talk about splash plays. Well, those are cannonball plays, you know, into the pool. So, here's the thing. On a play-in, play-out basis, which we talked about earlier, there's too many misses from Clinton Dix. There's too many times when he's just a tick late, too many times where he appears, you know, maybe he's not willing to take on, you know, the play like a hard-hitting safety should. My gut says that they let him walk in free agency just because those stats are going to command an $8 million a year type contract. And I don't think he's an $8 million a year player. I don't think the Packers view him that way. Mm-hmm. So my guess is they let him walk. But, okay, how do they fix it? You know, we talked about their shortcomings, Bryce being one of them, Josh Jones, the draft pick who hasn't worked out. In the short term, I think they stay with Bryce and Clinton Dix. But in the long term, you know, that's another position that's probably going to have to be overhauled, whether through free agency, which new general manager Brian Gutekunst has shown at least a penchant for, at least dabbling in it a little bit, which is more than they had done.
Yeah, absolutely. They've been more aggressive, not only in terms of the players they did add, but also they gave Kyle Fuller a very large offer sheet before he ended up staying with the Bears. Are you concerned about their play on the road so far? I mean, I don't know that it's been a big sample, of course. Only been two games, but, man, they did not look good against Washington. Like you said, 31-17, and they were outplayed from start to finish, at least from what I saw. And then, granted, in the Lions game, you know, they did miss a lot of those field goals and extra points, but still, they went down pretty comfortably early on. Three turnovers, no takeaways on the other side of the ball. Are you anything to that, you think, or just maybe a two-game sort of randomness thing?
Yeah, it's definitely something to keep an eye on. Last year they struggled on the road as well, but so much of that was not having Rodgers. I mean, you go back to last year, they lost their last two on the road, and now they've lost, you know, these on the road here. So it's a four-game road losing streak. Their last road win was at Cleveland, December 10th of 2017, in overtime. Again, a game where Brett Hundley, not Aaron Rodgers, started. So it's definitely something to keep an eye on. Played well at home, 3-0-1 at home, if I'm not mistaken. So we're going to find out here pretty quick because, you know, this stretch coming up on the road after the bye is definitely daunting. But, I don't know. I think right now it's just at this point it's just something to keep an eye on rather than something, you know, that they're overly concerned about.
Yeah, that makes sense. But like you said, we're going to find out if they can do it after the bye because this schedule, I mean, over the next 5 weeks, it is as tough as anybody in the league is going to see over the next 5 weeks. They are at the Rams. They are at the Patriots. They host the Dolphins, who have been a problem for teams here and there.
Yep.
At Seattle, which even though it's not a great team, still a very tough place to play. And then at Minnesota to finish that five-game stretch. Oh, that's so brutal. I mean, is there, you know, in the same way that you looked at the Packers before the year, you might have said, okay, well, they're going to go 5-1 in those first six games, and that's kind of what they have to hit to kind of stay on pace. Is there a record you would be able to sit here and after that five-game stretch and say, okay, well, they went 1-4, 2-3, or 3-2.
Yeah.
I feel good about their chances the rest of the way. What's sort of the baseline, you think, from your perspective about how they should perform over the next 5 weeks?
Yeah, I think if they get two of those five, if they go 2-3, it puts them at 5-5-1, which is obviously not great. But look, we've heard Aaron Rodgers use the word run the table before.
Sure.
They could very easily run the table the rest of the way, because they have Arizona and Atlanta at home, at Chicago, where they've always played great. Rodgers sort of owns Soldier Field, at the Jets, who aren't very good now and might be done by then,
right,
and then finishing at home against the Lions, a team that's won in Green Bay, I think, once in the last 23 years. So there's a very real possibility that, you know, even if they only, you know, go 2-3, they can still get to 10-5-1, which might be good enough in this division to win it. I mean, the year Rodgers broke the collarbone the first time, they won it at 8-7-1. So if they can get two, and now if you're going to ask me which two they get, obviously Miami's one of them.
Sure.
I don't know if maybe Seattle the other, but boy, Seattle's been a house of horrors for them over the years, the NFC Championship game, the Fail Mary game. So 2-3 doesn't sound great. But they might be okay if they do. I did talk to one scout last week who I told him he was crazy, and he said, you're going to say I'm crazy. But he said he wouldn't be surprised if they ended up going to the Rams and winning that game for a number of reasons. Wow. One, it's coming off their bye. Two, the Rams are due to have, you know, they're due to lose.
Sure.
And three, Rodgers definitely sort of gets up for these, you know, these high-profile shootout-type games, which you get the sense that one could be. If they were to get that first one, boy, it would sure set this, set them up much better. But even at 2-3, I think they'd probably be okay.
Is that your, if you had to pick a win total for the rest of the year, if that was sort of the, you know, you were going to be sitting here at the end of December, this is what their record is going to be, would that be the number you'd pick, 10-5-1?
Yeah, I think 10 wins. I think they can get there. I think that, look, Rodgers is going to play better. The offense is going to be more consistent. You know, the question is, does the defense sort of catch up a little bit? If they do, I think 10, even 11, if they get hot, is doable, but it's not going to be easy.
Yeah, absolutely not. Well, I appreciate you coming on, Rob. It's been a pleasure. I mean, I read your stuff all the time at ESPN. You fantastic work covering the Packers. But if other people want to follow my lead and check out your stuff on the Packers, where can they find that?
Well, Twitter is just at Rob Domofsky, DEMOVSKY. The NFL Mason page on ESPN.com is the place to go for not just Packer stuff, but all of our NFL coverage day in and day out.
Awesome. Well, Rob, thanks so much. We're going to come back here on the show with Nora Princiati of the Boston Globe talking about very important NFL celebrations here in a moment on the Bill Barnwell Show. All right, welcome back here to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm still Bill Barnwell of ESPN. Joining me now, another first-time guest to talk about something extremely important that she covered for her work at the Boston Globe earlier this week. It is my pal, Nora Princiati. Nora, how are you?
Hi, Bill. How are you? Yeah, I'm good. Know why they haven't put me on the spotlight team yet.
Yes, it's fair to say you are not only someone who covers the Patriots, does a great job doing that for the Globe, but also an investigative reporter. And this week, your investigation was into NFL touchdown celebrations. So, Nora, what led you to start this process of figuring out the NFL's fixation with touchdown celebrations?
Well, so I love touchdown celebrations and, you know, sack celebrations, big play celebrations. I think they're mm-hmm. super fun. It's one of the only things that NFL players get to do that I'm actually jealous of. Most of it, like, I think it's cool that they're into it, but, you know, hard pass for me. But I would love to get to, like, dance around on a football field and decide what to do and come up with a little plan. And the Patriots have been doing them, which is actually kind of notable because I'm not sure if you've heard, but the Patriots play for a coach who's, like, not always super into the fun, exuberant things. So we'd seen Patrick Chung and Daron Harmon do this, like, Karate Kid kick. Mm-hmm. That was really great. There's also a whole weird situation that I still don't understand where Kyle Van Noy does the Salt Bae meme to celebrate a big play. So I was sort of just trying to come up with an excuse to talk to those guys about why they were doing it. But I've actually written about celebrations in the past because, again, totally my jam. And I wanted it to be different. So I kind of took a little informal poll of the locker room and came up with a grading system. So that was kind of how it all came about.
You know, I'm very analytics friendly here at the show. So a grading system, numbers, you can quantify celebrations. Absolutely in on that. You, in your column for the Globe, though, you went and rated the Patriots' different celebrations, and you docked Kyle Van Noy, if I'm not mistaken, for simultaneously doing the Salt Bae meme and simultaneously, or I guess as part of the same celebration, also doing a Fortnite dance?
Yeah. So, and this is actually, I feel guilty about not docking him points, but that whole situation, one of my coworkers, Jim McBride, during the game when he did that, turned to me as the token millennial and was like, "Is that a Fortnite dance?" And I was like, "Oh, I don't know." And he was right, it was. So I felt bad about that. And he has much more street cred than I do. But I really like simplicity, I think, is important. The Salt Bae thing is already kind of hard to understand, as much as I'm obsessed with it and love it and am determined to get to the bottom of, like, what is Kyle's thing with Salt Bae. But it just gets confusing if you do two things at once.
Kyle Van Noy was strangely cagey about the celebration, no?
Yeah, he won't tell me why he's obsessed with Salt Bae, but I'm going to figure it out.
Are you going to take this to Salt Bae himself to try and figure this out?
Well, so that guy is actually kind of weirdly controversial, right? Because he's from Turkey and has some weird connections to shady people in that government. This was like a whole thing recently. It had nothing to do with football or the Patriots. So I don't know if I'm going to like try to get into Salt Bae's real world, but he does have one of his steakhouses in Miami. Maybe there's a way, you know, the Patriots play there in December. Maybe there's a way for me to kind of like go see if I can get some more intel.
The other thing I would say about the Kyle Van Noy combination celebration is, again, not to criticize Salt Bae, obviously, because we're not doing that here apparently on the show, but wouldn't it be more impressive if he simultaneously did the, like, the Salt Bae, like, salt drop and simultaneously did a Fortnite dance? Wouldn't that be, like, a positive for him as well? I don't understand why that would be a negative for Kyle Van Noy.
I mean, maybe, so the grading system, there's three categories. There's the idea, the execution, and then the situation in which you're doing it. Maybe you get some sort of degree of difficulty kind of points that contribute to the idea score. But again, I think it really makes your execution tough because it's just a lot of weird movements. And, you know, football stadiums are big places. You got to kind of think of it as like a singer doing an arena tour, mm-hmm. where everything has to be so huge that you're, you know, playing to the nosebleeds. And I just don't think that it works.
So there's not a lot of subtlety you're looking for in a classic touchdown celebration. Okay, I'm going to keep that in mind. Later we're going to come up with our own touchdown celebrations, and one of them is pretty subtle, so I'm a little concerned about that one. But we'll get to that a little later on.
I'm sure I'll contradict myself there like 100 times, but that's how I feel.
That's very fair. So you also went around the league and discussed some popular recent celebrations, one of which we discussed yesterday, which was the Juju Smith-Schuster baby birthing celebration, which you only gave, I believe, a 3 out of 4. How did that do on your scale?
So the final score was a 7 out of 10.
Okay.
Which is pretty good. You know, I don't want to be handing out 9s too frequently.
Sure, you're a discerning grader.
Absolutely. So, and for that celebration, which, as you said, was Juju giving birth to a football with James Conner acting as the midwife, I gave it 3 out of 4 points for the idea. So there's a maximum 4 points for the idea, a maximum 4 points for the execution, and then the remaining 2 points are for the situation, but they're a little bit discretionary.
Sure.
And you will find that I use those sort of discretionary points as I see fit in ways that were this something that had actual consequences would drive people crazy.
Sure.
But I'm going to do it anyway.
Sure.
I thought that Juju's celebration, so I gave it 3 out of 4 idea points. You know, I like the idea that sometimes we talk about Pittsburgh as the kind of birthplace of football or that area of Pennsylvania. And I thought that maybe it was kind of like an homage to that, which was cool. Mm-hmm. It got 3 out of 4 execution points. It was very clear what they were doing. The one thing that I took issue with was that Juju did this like very weird kind of like abs engaged, shoulders off the ground, kind of wiggling back and forth, which like, look, if you're giving birth, like you do what you got to do. But I just didn't think that that was particularly believable. But then he had a really nice way of rocking the newborn football.
Sure.
I thought it was great. And then I gave it 1 out of 2 situation points because they did it after going up 12-0 against the Falcons in the first quarter. So, like, that's a fine time to celebrate. Mm-hmm. What I found from talking to the Patriots players that I joked around with about this is that basically just don't celebrate when you're losing.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not really, like, a super compelling situation. It doesn't really add anything to it.
Right.
So I just did 1 out of the 2 possible situation points. Mm-hmm. So if you add that all together, it's 7 out of 10.
See, I find it interesting you find it as like a birthplace thing, because I see it as more as like the cycle of life and death, because you think about, was it Dark Knight? Which Batman movie was that where Hines Ward returns the kick and the field opens up and then Bane takes over the stadium?
Oh my God, Bill, I didn't even think of that. That's crazy.
See, that's the, unfortunately, the death, and now we have life. We have Juju Smith-Schuster giving birth to a football and reinvigorating the Pittsburgh area with life. I think that's it's very poetic, I think.
It's beautiful.
Were you upset his touchdown celebrations have not yet involved his dog, Bougie?
So I love Bougie. I think about Bougie a lot. I don't know. Bougie's pretty young. Bougie just turned 1 yesterday, actually. So maybe, I mean, I'm not for exploiting your children or your dog children. So I don't know. I think Juju can involve Bougie like when the time comes, when the time is right.
You also, you did not like Tennessee stealing the bowling idea from the Philadelphia Eagles, but you did like something about that celebration, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, they did it when they were playing the Eagles, which I thought was cool, you know, like pretty savage. But yeah, I mean, if you take somebody else's idea, you just don't get credit for it. I liked that one otherwise. I sort of wish that I graded it higher. I also gave that one a 7 out of 10. Mm-hmm. And it was, it did perfectly everywhere else, but it was really just that they took someone else's idea. And I'm not about that.
Well, do you think someone should celebrate a touchdown against the Seahawks by simulating a pass on the 1-yard line after the play?
Oh my gosh. Oh. Oh, that is cold. That is so cold. But yes, I do. I actually very much do.
If Malcolm Butler could somehow be involved, that would be even better. If Tennessee scored a touchdown against the Seahawks and had Malcolm Butler run onto the field to intercept a would-be touchdown pass, I think that would be great. Alex Collins, someone who does an Irish dance on a relatively frequent basis when he scores, required a secondary grader for further assistance.
Yes. So here at the Globe, we have Tara Sullivan, who's one of our wonderful columnists, and she's actually a certified Irish dance instructor. So I sent her the clip of one of Alex Collins's Irish dance celebrations, and she told me that she thought it was really good. She thought that he should have crossed his feet a little bit more, or maybe pointed his toes a little bit more sharply, but other than that, she thought it was excellent. So I gave it a 3 out of 4 for execution.
That's very helpful. And you also love the Dolphins high-fiving on the way to the end zone. Is it cooler to do things on the way to where you're going to celebrate than actually doing it while you're celebrating?
So that gives me a lot of anxiety. Oh, sorry, there's a phone going off here. That gives me a lot of anxiety because if a Patriots player did that, they might never be heard from again. The idea of celebrating before you've actually scored, but I do think it's kind of cool when you pull it off, and it differentiates it from other touchdown celebrations, which I think makes it a big deal. I also felt that it was noteworthy that Jakeem Grant was able to catch up with Albert Wilson, whereas none of the Raiders were. So that was pretty good.
I see. So we're going to come up with our own touchdown celebrations here in a moment. Before we get to that, got to talk about SeatGeek. The MLB World Series is coming up, and Nora lives in the Boston area. I spent a lot of time in the Boston area. I may go ahead and buy myself a ticket to the World Series using SeatGeek because I'm not going to lie. I use SeatGeek every single day, whether I'm looking at prices for an event that I'm planning on going to, whether I'm helping out a friend who might be interested in getting a ticket to a game. I go on SeatGeek and I tell them what the prices are because I know we're getting the best possible deal on SeatGeek. They're going around the web. They're using their deal score technology to rate the tickets, so I know I'm getting a good deal to the game me or the people I care about want to go to, whether it's sports, concerts, theater, anything that you need a ticket to get into. SeatGeek is going to sell tickets on there, and every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you don't have to worry about getting fake tickets. SeatGeek is going to take care of you. You're not going to end up missing out. Even better, best possible outcome of this is that you use SeatGeek for the first time and you get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. And to do that, just got to download the SeatGeek app on your phone, enter in promo code Barnwell today. It's my last name, B-A-R-N-W-E-L-L. Enter in promo code Barnwell. You'll get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. You can't beat that. SeatGeek, life's an event. We have the tickets. Now back to the show. I asked you to do this in advance of coming on the show. I came up with my own touchdown celebrations. I want to hear what yours are as well. Do you have a bunch of them? Do you have one or two? What did you come up with for the show?
Okay. So most touchdown celebrations are just celebrations. They're generally either, there's a lot of dances. There are a lot of demonstrations of other sports activities. And there are a lot of, there's some pop culture references kind of. So I was thinking about trying to steer clear of those things and what the other options could be. And so I would think, I would love to see some teams reenact some kind of iconic moments in history.
Oh.
I was thinking like a Washington crossing the Delaware would be good.
Oh, yes.
The part of the Delaware River where that took place is pretty close to Trenton, New Jersey. So I was thinking an AFC, because I cover the Patriots, NFC East thing going on, maybe Redskins Giants.
Sure.
Because New Jersey and Washington, there could be some sort of thing going on there. Also, the Redskins seem to just have a different set of wide receivers every week, and that could take a lot of people. So that might help. So I think that would be a good time to pull it off. Some other ones that I thought of were Neil Armstrong on the moon.
Ooh, I like Neil Armstrong on the moon. That makes total sense.
the VJ Day Kiss in Times Square photo.
You have some very topical ones going back to 1770s, the 1940, now in 1960. Do you have anything that's a little more modern, perhaps?
Well,
no is a valid answer.
So here are some other things I have written.
Oh no!
I have a notebook here that has. I did this. Well, I guess last night, which feels like a long time ago, but was not really. I have written down the welcoming of a new pope question. a UN Security Council meeting.
Oh, okay. I had in my notes here, no joke, I had model UN. So I was thinking on a smaller scale, but same idea.
That's great. No, that's a great idea. That might be easier to, no one has to be Putin. So that's good. So one thing that I would like to see is something recurring.
Yes.
You know, like some of these guys, so we talked about Alex Pons has been doing the river dance thing over and over again. Dante Moncrief has been doing like air guitar every time he scores. Mm-hmm. But I would like to see something where it's kind of episodic.
Yes.
And I was thinking that, and I said that I was going to steer clear of pop culture, but you know, the Rams, they score a lot.
Sure. Of course.
They use the same basic personnel groupings a lot.
Sure. Of course.
So they're going to have a lot of chances to do this. And so I was thinking maybe iconic scenes from Tom Cruise movies. Like they could do one for maybe not each touchdown because that would require a lot of prep. I also have a note here that says too much running ? For iconic Tom Cruise scenes. But I would like to see that, or even, you know, if Moncrief is going to keep doing the air guitar thing, maybe let's tell a story. Like no one makes it big as a musician without some trials and tribulations. So, you know, maybe let's see this guy blow a gig. Let's see him bomb, but then, you know, keep at it and let's like have a lesson here. And then the last one that I'll give you.
It sounds like you want to just reenact A Star Is Born, but with Dante Moncrief.
Wait, I haven't seen A Star Is Born yet. I haven't seen it yet. I really want to see it, but okay. Don't.
No spoilers.
Everybody keeps bringing up this movie, and I haven't seen it yet. So this is the one that I really like. If a team does this, I don't know what I'll do, but I will have to do something because I think it would be amazing. What about a science experiment?
Ooh.
What if they recreated, the chemical reaction of photosynthesis?
This is so much work, the pantomime alone.
It's pretty simple. It's 6 CO2 plus 6 H2O plus sunlight goes to C6H12O6 and 6 oxygen. So it's glucose and oxygen. And all you need is sunlight. So maybe you have the quarterback like kind of, you know, twinkle his fingers as if it's the rays of sunlight and you see the reaction on the field. I think this would be great.
This is very close. That's actually very close to the American Sign Language sign for sun. So if people in the crowd know sign language, you will have nailed it. It'll be very easy to figure out. Otherwise, it might be tough, though, unfortunately. See, when you were saying, like, episodic, I was thinking, like, maybe like a murder mystery where, like, they reenact, like, a different part of the scene each time that we, you know, each time they score a touchdown. So every time they score, we find out a little bit more about what's happened. And then by the end, we figure out who actually committed the murder. That might not be super appropriate for NFL stadiums, but something like episodic makes total sense to me.
True crime is so big right now.
Yes. There are like three football podcasts that are about true crime right now, if I'm not mistaken. Doesn't The Globe have one at the moment? Am I wrong there? Or is it just a feature?
Yeah, about the life and death of Aaron Hernandez.
Yes, it's highly recommended. The articles have been great. I definitely recommend you check that out on the Boston Globe site. I have three. I was not as concerned about pop culture and avoiding pop culture as you were. They're a little more topical, I feel like, but I could be mistaken.
Well, let's hear them.
I want to hear what your grades are for this one. So, first one, a little past its peak, I would say, but still comes up a fair amount. I'm saying a football team should reenact the distracted boyfriend meme. So you have two players walking down the street.
God, that's really good.
You have the third player who is the more attractive person who's being noticed. He has the football in his hands. The boyfriend turns around. The other player makes that face. We're out. It's quick. Everyone knows it, on the internet at least. It would be a little subtle. You have to see a person's face through their helmet. I can only imagine what the announcers would try and think of what it was, but I think it would be great. I think if you got it, it would be wonderful.
What receivers are mad about their targets right now? Like, that's who has
Odell.
To do it, you know?
Odell,
right,
of course.
Yeah.
Odell.
Oh, my gosh. You get even – that would be phenomenal. Bill, I love this idea. Fantastic work.
Good. I also thought maybe like a slip and slide where you have, you need like a snowy field. I don't think you can do it on a dry field. And then they might have too much in the way of equipment, but you always see soccer players like sprinting and sliding and celebrating. No?
Yeah. I never understand how that works, like physics wise, but I know that it happens. So right. I think that could work.
So that's a perfect concept. I feel like if you had like a snowy field, you could have a bunch of players slip and slide down the slip and slide and have like people around celebrating and running behind to go back on the slide again. That would be great.
Yeah. Good, clean fun.
Okay. I have one more. It's very strange. You're a very young person. We talked about this. A lot of times, like, I will bring up a pop culture reference and I will expect you to get it and you will not get it. That comes up quite frequently when it comes to like late 90s, alternative rock, I would say. Am I wrong to say that?
Okay, Bill, this happened with one Goo Goo Dolls music video.
Pretty once. Big Goo Goo Doll song, though, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay, but, like, I wasn't watching music videos in 1998.
Big mistake. You got time. Their music videos are on YouTube. You have time to catch up. But.
That's true.
Did you ever play the game Tetris?
Wait, what? No.
You never played Tetris?
I know what it is.
You know
but
what it is.
Not really, no.
Okay. Well, I'm thinking like Tetris. You have players in different shapes. They form a ball. And then you have the football, like, reset the line. And then they all just go away because that's how Tetris works.
Wait, Tetris is the one with the like, blocks. And some of them are shaped like
I can't tell if you're being sarcastic or not.
No. So this is – part of it is – I'm sure part of it's age-related, but it's really more that I just was never, like, a game, like, a video game person.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's big. I feel like this is a great thing that I'm not getting the appropriate reaction to, but that's fine. I think Tetris would be great.
It sounds good. Yes. No, I think I like it. I think I like it.
Thank you for calming me down. No, I mean, I think there's... Anything video game related, I think, would be good. But again, I think it depends on the complexity. Like, I think the older and the less intensive the video game is, the funnier it is to see players reenacting it.
Yes, I agree with that.
Do you think there will be, like, what do you think the line is where either a team or a head coach or perhaps the league office will come in and say, oh, you can't do that. That's an inappropriate celebration.
Well, when they changed the rules last year, I think the language about, you know, what's inappropriate stayed the same, but it's just that it can't be, like, suggestive or provocative or something. Or you can't have a weapon. But some are actually okay. Like, Brandon Cooks was always allowed to do the arrow thing, whereas, like, finger guns wouldn't be okay or whatever. I don't know. I mean, Isaiah Crowell who got fined for the butt wipe?
Yes. Mm-hmm. But he got a butt wipe sponsorship, so.
Right. Although that sort of puts him on your corner, right? Like,
No comment. No comment on that matter. I don't want to pick a fight with Isaiah Crowell or competing butt wipe companies, but.
Okay. Well, we're all very happy that everybody is supporting their butt wipes and everything. But I guess, I mean, that was kind of the line, right?
It seems like it. Yeah. It seems like if it's a bathroom related activity, like you could not, yeah. Like, I don't know. Could you, pantomime taking a shower. I don't think that would be against the rules.
Pretty weird, but you could.
Oh, sure. Sure. It would be very strange. Like if you pantomimed, like going in a soaking tub and reading a book, I don't think that would be a penalty, but it would just be maybe relaxing.
That would be nice. I don't know. That just is a nice activity.
It's like the gentle breeze of fall. I think I want more abstract and just kind of pleasant and relaxing touchdown celebrations.
Yeah, like what about a wine tasting?
A wine tasting or like driving down and checking out the foliage? I mean.
Oh, yeah. Oh, like leaf peeping.
Wait, what? Is that a common phrase?
You know, it's called leaf peeping. Checking out the foliage. It's called leaf peeping.
I've never heard that phrase in my life, and now I can never look at a leaf again. I feel like a creep now if I look at a leaf during the fall because of what you just said.
No! No, it's okay. You can peep the leaves.
Oh, I don't like this. I think
it should
we
be
leaves.
I should have said leaves.
I just love the leaf peep. Just like the so many vowel sounds, and they're all gross. Ugh.
I'm sorry. I just ruined an iconic fall activity for you.
Top three fall activity for me in New England. It's all ruined now. Very sad. Well, Nora, you not only cover touchdown celebrations, but you also, in your spare time, also break down the New England Patriots, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, well, I do.
I was going to endorse you and say you were very good at it and encourage people to check out your work, but it seems like that moment has been ruined now with .
I'm mostly about the touchdown celebrations, you know? No, just kidding. I cover the Patriots. It's a good time.
Well, if you want to check out more of Nora's work covering the New England Patriots, which is excellent, Nora, where can they do that? Where can they find you on social media? Where can they check out the things you write on a week-to-week basis?
BostonGlobe.com or on my Twitter, which is @NoraPrinciotti. I'm not going to spell my last name, but good luck. I believe in you all. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
You're refusing to spell your last name?
What?
Are you refusing to spell your last name on principle?
No, I just felt like it was going to take a lot of time. Do you want me to do it?
Please.
NoraPrinciotti.
I wasn't saying you needed to spell your first name, which is four letters long.
Actually, my real name is Leonora. Which is longer.
It's true. It is longer. No one's arguing with you. Leonora is longer. When did you change? I feel like we talk about this a lot on the show. When did you change from Leonora to Nora?
So never. My parents always called me Nora. I don't even have, I mean, my mom, like maybe once a year, if I'm being a pain or a bad daughter, will be like, Leonora! But that's really the only time it ever comes up, or at an airport or something.
You never thought about changing it?
Someone sees it on an ID. No. Leonora is just like I like the name because I like the story behind the name. I was named after a character in an opera. Mm-hmm. And the character's cool, so I'm good with that. But it's just a little dramatic. Like, I don't really feel like a Leonora for everyday purposes. It's just, like, a little aggressive.
If the character was a dweeb, though, then you would have been ashamed of your name.
Maybe, yeah. Or it just would have felt like, really, do we have to do this whole, like, all of these extra letters?
All those three extra letters. Well, by any name, Nora Princiotti's work is excellent. I'd recommend you check it out if you're interested in the Patriots, if you're interested in touchdown celebrations. Nora, thanks so much for coming on.
Absolutely, Bill. Thank you for having me. This has been fun.
All right. Thanks so much to our guests today. Nora Princiotti, Rob Domofsky. Two very different conversations, but two fun football things. The Green Bay Packers and touchdown celebrations. Check out their work. They're both great. And we more audio coming next week. Another Bill Barnwell show on the way, recapping week 7. Come on, baby.